Coming up on New York Now, we discover what lies beneath the waters here in the northern Adirondacks.
This stuff grows real tall. These plants in here are about 4 foot, multi-stem plants, and they get about that fat.
And Karen DeWitt of New York State Public Radio and Ken Lovitz of the Daily News join the Reporters Roundtable.
Originally, I run the MTA, then it was, I don't run the MTA, then he was back to, I declare a transit emergency and I'm taking control of the MTA, and now he's back to, well, really, it's a city situation.
It's next on New York Now, right here on PBS.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET. Additional funding provided by the Leo Cox Beach Philanthropic Foundation. Winner of a New York State Emmy for Best Political Program, this is New York Now.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of New York Now. I'm Matt Ryan. We'll have our feature story from the Adirondacks coming up later on in the program. But first up, we send it on over to my partner from the Times Union, Casey Seiler, who moderates today's Reporters Roundtable.
All right, thanks, Matt. And now for analysis of the week's news, I am happy to be back at the Reporters Roundtable, along with Ken Lovitt of the Daily News and Karen DeWitt of New York State Public Radio. Geez, guys, when I went on vacation, Governor Cuomo and Mayor Bill de Blasio were not getting along well. Well, what a change a week makes. They're still not getting along very well. And to paraphrase Aerosmith, the MTA blame game keeps a rolling all night long. Ken, sum it up. The governor basically said, MTA, not really my responsibility.
Yeah, he keeps bouncing back and forth on that one. Originally, I run the MTA, then it was, I don't run the MTA, then he was back to, I declare a transit emergency and I'm taking control of the MTA, and now he's back to, well, really, it's a city situation. And I hate to correct the host, but they did get along for 2 days this week. They held an event together on Monday or Tuesday to rip into the federal health care plans. And then 2 days later, that goodwill just dissipated.
They appeared together. There was actually a picture on the governor's official feed where de Blasio and Cuomo were hugging each other. But yeah, if you blinked, Casey, you would have missed that moment. So they're back to being
odds. There was an event on Thursday where they were both scheduled to be there, and de Blasio showed up late and didn't show up until Cuomo left. So
it's like a divorced couple.
Yeah, it's really getting ugly again.
I mean, the bottom line, the MTA is a mess this summer, and nobody wants to own it. It's just a hot potato, and they keep switching it back and forth. And Cuomo's in trouble because he tried to own the MTA when things were going well, and now he doesn't want to own it anymore, but it seems like, you know, people are not really buying that. I mean, theoretically, there's the MTA board, right? The governor has appointees, the mayor, the Senate, the assembly, and theoretically, they're supposed they're supposed to all work together, right, for the good of the transit system, which is hard to say with a straight face these days, because it doesn't seem like they're doing that at all.
And this is a real issue for the governor now, politically, because, and I wrote this a few weeks ago, that, you know, he declared this the summer of hell, and mostly because of the problems with Amtrak down there, which are causing problems for the commuter rails. But the reality is, if this continues, people are going to look for someone to blame, and it's going to be him. And what's a problem for the governor is, in 2014, he really won re-election thanks in large part to New York City, Nassau County, and Westchester County. And who is being directly impacted by this transit crisis? The people in those regions, you know. And so they're going to look for someone to blame if this doesn't, if they don't see improvement and they don't feel it's going in the right direction. Well, and that could hurt him next year during his election.
To that point, here are some numbers from a Siena poll that came out this week. The governor's favorability rating is 52%, down from 61% 2 months ago.
Still good. Still about 50.
Still about 50, yeah. But, you know, not a good trend. Yeah. 59%, however, give him poor or fair marks on issues related to the MTA. That is not good at all.
And the loss for him from where he was in May to now, according to Steve Greenberg, the Siena pollster, really comes directly from downstate. And he was putting it right on the problems with the mass transit system. And the governor is going to have to deal with this, and he's going to have to deal with it in a substantive way. It can't just be one of those things where he puts out a few press releases, gets a few cheap headlines.
And tries to distract people. Like, partly that healthcare rally yeah. was an attempt, I think, a distraction. It's a legitimate issue that they want to repeal
Obamacare.
The
problem with MTA right now, yeah. though, is people are going to know if it's getting better or not.
Because they're on it
every
day.
So this isn't something where you say, oh, the economy's turning around, and you can argue numbers, and it's kind of a, you know,
or you can come upstate and give out an economic development grant and say, Buffalo's turning around.
People are
going to
know what's going on.
People feel it on their feet, and they feel it on their brow when they're stuck in that.
So like he's got to regret labeling it the summer of hell.
Yeah,
when you think about it for a governor who's known to be politically smart, that was a big mistake because now people have a label and he's the one who said it, so they pin it back to him, which makes it a little bit worse for him.
And the summer of hell could become an electoral train wreck for him if it doesn't improve.
Train wreck, good.
Okay,
I like it.
I know. But it is still a summer away. If it's not as bad next summer,
He's got time to turn it around, but he's got to deal with it substantively.
And it's also years of neglect of the system. Well, so how do you fix that quick?
To unpack that a little bit.
Sorry, we're getting off track.
No, that's fine. off track once again. to unpack this a little bit, the governor's people, including Joe Loda, who we just named to essentially run the MTA in his stead, is making the argument that, well, yes, there's the MTA, and then there's the New York City Transit Authority, which the accusation now from Loda, from the governor, is that, well, the city hasn't been doing enough to fund the Transit Authority, and that that is going to be the charge that is going to be made against the city probably for the foreseeable future.
And the governor has been doing this a lot. He did it when they were arguing for more money for the capital program for the MTA. He got the city to kick in $2.5 billion, which was more than what the Mayor de Blasio wanted to do, but he argued that it really benefits New York City primarily, and you need to do something. So he's trying to deflect the blame to de Blasio. I don't know if that argument will hold, his whole thing that we're doing this as a moral obligation, the state, but really legally it's the city's responsibility, really doesn't hold water for a lot of people.
And they made that decision back in 1980. Mm-hmm. That's a long time ago, so that's pretty established that the state has a stake and pays money for it. No, I don't think all this finger-pointing is helping any of them. I mean, really, you know, I sound like Pollyanna here, but they should get together, the two of them, and start, you know, at least acting like they have answers, because it's not helping, you know, either of their popularity.
Loda is coming out next week with a report on exactly what's wrong with the system and what needs to be done. I mean, does anybody doubt that that is going to be vetted, if not authored, by the Cuomo administration?
Oh, absolutely. Well, certainly vetted. They're not going to put out anything without running it by them. And we're seeing it with Loda this week anyway, by the way. You know, he's gone after Mayor de Blasio now twice. And, you know, technically the MTA is an independent body, but he's sure pointing fingers directly at the mayor, which is at the governor's behest, I'm sure. But this is going to be an interesting report because we're going to see where the problems are, how much money potentially it will be to cost, and whether money has to be diverted from any of the governor's pet projects to fund these things.
Well, if they were honest about what's wrong with it and list like logical steps to fix it, I think that would go a long way. But I actually don't really see them doing that. They try to put the best, you know, focus on it, the best light. But I think if they were really honest with people who are riding the subways every day or are stuck somewhere or, you know, walking through the tunnels in Harlem because the train broke down, they might appreciate at least knowing that somebody's trying to fix it.
The governor went to Long Island this week and he gave a speech about, you know, how they've now approved funding to build a new third track for the Long Island Railroad and how important it is. And he did this whole long speech and really didn't mention the crisis, other than he said, oh, it's going to be summer of hell, and he pointed at the Amtrak situation. But really, you know, it's the Long Island commuters on those trains who are having a lot of the problems as well, and really just glossed over it. It was really surprising that he didn't even address it.
And notice when the trains break down, he's never there. He rushed out to Buffalo Thursday when there was a tornado, and it's legitimate to go out there. It destroyed the Erie County Fairgrounds. But so he was right there, changed his schedule, went there to be with everybody. And when something happens in the MTA system, he's never there.
So sticking with potential problems for Governor Cuomo, the glass half full side of this is the fact that his July 6-month campaign finance disclosure showed that he's got $25.7 million in the kitty. That's a lot of money. Is that enough to scare away all but the most kamikaze GOP challengers?
Absolutely. Can you name anyone who has money right now who could run beyond a couple of million dollars? Maybe Eric Schneiderman. I didn't look at his numbers this week, but he had, you know, the Attorney General
he's
has
got a record for
some,
himself. I think it was $7.5 million.
Yeah, single, which is a lot less. Millions, so that, yeah, that goes a long way to, you know, establishing Cuomo as, you know, the front runner for 2018, no matter what happens with the subways. Although it is a year and a half is a long time, and, you know, sometimes you don't have enough money to get reelected if things go really bad for you.
And I think the Republicans are really looking at it as an opportunity. They see that the transit situation is something that they can pounce on. And the reality is, if they can weaken him in New York City and Westchester and Long Island, then they have a chance. You know, it's not a, at this point, I wouldn't say a great chance, but if this crisis really hurts the governor, you know, again, you go back to 94, no one expected George Pataki to beat Mario Cuomo. If people are upset, you know, the governor doesn't have a huge amount of support upstate. If he loses downstate, then it's a ballgame, regardless
leader,
of money.
Senate Majority Leader John Flanagan, for instance, earlier this year, just kind of expressed a little bit of interest, though he pulled back on that. I think people like that, they're watching, they're waiting. They want to see what happens.
But who's but the name? You mentioned Flanagan, but beyond Rob Astorino.
Harry Wilson, but nobody knows
him. Right, no, you fall off the cliff of popularity pretty quickly.
A weakness in the Republican Party that they don't have somebody waiting in the wings.
But you also don't know who may step forward. You know, no one saw Mike Bloomberg coming till he came.
Right.
And as Ken mentioned, George Pataki. You know, did we know who he was?
I thought you were going to suggest that maybe Pataki might.
Maybe he will. You know, he's.
Well, one never knows.
But we didn't
take out a second Cuomo.
Exactly.
He was very unknown. You know, when he started, so like I wouldn't have predicted him. You know, a year and a half before.
Let's switch from Albany to Washington, where as of we're talking Friday morning, it would appear that the Senate healthcare comprehensive effort is at this point defunct. Along with that, after Republicans acknowledged that they weren't going to have the votes to move it forward, on Thursday, Congressman John Faso, Kinderhook Republican, acknowledged that the so-called Faso-Collins Amendment that would obligate New York State to pick up what is currently the county-paid share of Medicaid is defunct, he says, because the only path forward is going to be a bipartisan bill in the Senate. No, there is no way that a bipartisan bill would include the Faso-Collins Amendment, which, of course, the governor and various and sundry Democrats have said is cruel and unusual to New York State.
Yeah, what will live on is the enmity he created from Governor Cuomo by putting his name on this thing that totally annoyed Cuomo that the feds were meddling in how the state government ran its financing for counties. I don't know if it's dead in the water. I mean, I wouldn't be that surprised if the Senate did pass some kind of repeal and replace. Remember when it was dead in the House and then all of a sudden one Friday afternoon they voted on it? So it's really hard to say right now. It's so up in the air.
And we should mention the governor has raised $1 million through the state party, mostly through reunions right now, to take on six upstate House Republicans, including John Faso and Chris Collins, the guys who authored that amendment.
First reported in your outstanding Monday column.
Then again, though, the governor is not that popular in Faso's district, so I don't know how much it would help if he's personally involved in that.
Looking ahead to 2018 in a different way, we now have a sense of when the trials in the upstate development scandal might begin. The decision from federal Judge Caproni is that there will be two of them now. Mm-hmm. Team Prococo, let's call them, will likely be tried as early as January.
That's right. The governor's former closest aide.
Top aide and long, decades-long compromise.
Bribery, among other federal corruption charges. January 8th is the date. Just in time for Governor Cuomo's State of the State message, which happens anytime from early to mid-January.
Oh, if he does one.
So, yes.
That is true.
He's trying to get out of it.
The second trial.
Well, last year he did it around the state, right? So maybe he'll have to do it in a different state this time.
And the second trial, which let's call it Team Calieros, named for Alain Calieros, former head of SUNY Polytechnic Institute, would take place perhaps out in Buffalo or out in Western New York.
Because there's also Buffalo developers who are involved, charged with bid rigging and,
Syracuse,
and bribery.
Syracuse developers would be would show up in the trials.
That would be May at the earliest.
Which would be right around the time of the state Democratic convention.
Absolutely, and when the campaigns are starting to heat up.
And we're talking about the MTA and how that could affect Cuomo's chances. These trials could also have a major impact, depending on what comes out. Now, the governor has not been criminally implicated, but look what across the river in New Jersey, what happened to Chris Christie. He was not criminally implicated during Bridgegate, but his numbers after two of his aides were convicted of felony charges related to Bridgegate, his numbers just tanked to all-time lows and continued to tank. So between the MTA, between these trials, the governor's facing some challenging times.
And he's already said he might have to testify as a witness. He put that out last December, which makes me think that, he really is going to have to testify in some way. And who knows how that boomerangs back on him, even if he's not right now, he's not accused of any wrongdoing, even if he's never accused of wrongdoing. It's just the association of what might be a very sordid trial.
Why didn't he know certain things? There's going to be a lot of questions.
Especially if that May trial gets put off to the fall. That would be kind of a nightmare for him, I think.
Related to this, just about a week ago, state Supreme Court judge ordered that the Cuomo administration does have to disclose a big passel of documents related to Prococo's service, interactions that Prococo had with other top aides to Cuomo during the period that was under the gaze of federal investigators. They've got 45 days to put those out. It's unclear whether or not the administration is going to appeal that ruling, but it's just the sense of the drip, drip, drip and the kind of scandal management is
well, that shouldn't be an issue because they promised the most transparent and open state government in history. So I'm sure we'll be seeing those documents any day now.
Exactly. Very quickly, the last thing we ought to touch upon is apparently the governor huddled on Wednesday with Senate Democrats saying, please, let's all get along. In other words, let's get along with the IDC.
And the Senate Dems are like, okay, but no one believes that he's going to actually help them. Matter of fact, earlier the week, he was asked about will he fight for a Democratic control. He says, I can't force a marriage if people don't want to be married. And
well, I think that's partially true at this point because everything is so bitter now. But it has worked to Cuomo's advantage to have a split Senate because they can't get together with the Assembly and work against him.
Summer of hell continues. All right. Well, thanks very much to Ken Lovett from the Daily News and Karen DeWitt from New York State Public Radio. And now we'll kick it back to Matt at the desk.
All right. Thank you, Casey. This month, the state highlighted the need for invasive species awareness with a week full of programs ranging from lectures to hikes along affected areas. We went along with the Upper Saranac Foundation in search of two examples that have created a nuisance, particularly in the North Country. The 3,000 lakes and ponds in the Adirondacks are some of the most beautiful you will find in the United States. But in some spots, what lies beneath can be pretty ugly. We are in the Upper Saranac Lake watershed today, where we are in search of milfoil. This is Eurasian milfoil, first discovered in 1996. A decade later, they found this variable milfoil. Our tour guide for the day was Guy Middleton of the Upper Saranac Lake Foundation.
All right, Jim, I gotta shed a layer, I think.
We, along with some local homeowners, followed him out on the waters of Fish Creek Pond, part of the Upper Saranac Lake watershed. It's a popular destination for campers.
The good thing is I see very little milfoil right here, but once we get on the other side of the bridge, I think we'll see a different story.
He was right, as our camera quickly found out.
Today, we went from the campground up into an area where we have not managed to see what invasives look like in a natural setting that are not managed. And as we saw today, that without management, once they're established, they do take over all other native plants and outcompete any other plants, and there are no predators that will compete with them or other plants that will compete, and it takes over the environment.
The dense, unmanaged Eurasian and variable leaf milfoil made paddling difficult and would deter the most diehard swimmers.
This is a piece of variable leaf that is floating, but in preparation, and you can't see it once I take it out, but it's full of roots. So the roots are already starting. See how those roots are? Those roots are in preparation to land somewhere else and start a new plant. And really the only way to see that is when it's kind of floating in the water. Variable leaf is actually taking over the Eurasian a little bit, but both grow uncontrollably and are creating a problem because this obviously hampers the recreation at Fish Creek, but also is a tributary into Upper Saranac Lake and all water sources downriver.
The foundation has known of the existence of milfoil here since the mid-90s, but it wasn't until 2014 that it was spotted in Upper Saranac Lake. Last year, they started a pilot program harvesting some of the densest areas in the pond, and in just 4 weeks, removed 9.5 tons.
This stuff grows real tall. These plants in here are about 4 foot, multi-stem plants, and they get about that fat. So they cone up and just fall over each other. So we'll go down, find where the root ball is, dig it out with our hands, throw it in the bag. Once these bags get filled up, we'll get it to our top water, Brianne over there, and she'll bring the bag back to the boat and then give us a fresh bag to start all over again. Just keep repeating the process till it's all gone.
Through a $100,000 grant from the Department of Environmental Conservation, the foundation will continue this work here at Fish Creek Pond for the next 3 years. Jackie Howard of the Adirondack Watershed Institute at Paul Smith College explains where your watercraft is most likely to carry these invasive species.
The most common places that we find the plants are on the trailer and the wheel wells and the felt lining, and also stuck on the prop of the boat. And then when we look at things like spiny water flea or zebra mussels are almost always caked right along the hull of the boat. And then spiny water flea, that's why we ask people to drain their bilge and their live wells and clean those out thoroughly, because they're going to be stuck in that standing water. And they're so tiny, they're only a centimeter long each, and they're a cartilage-based crustacean. So you're not going to see them with your naked eye. That's why we ask them to flush and clean those out.
There is little doubt that more people across the state know the potential danger of invasive species now than, say, 5 years ago. But after the education comes the need for retention and continued practice to keep these unwanted hitchhikers out of the water.
The Adirondack Park is 6 million acres, and there are a lot of bodies of water. And so we can't have a stored at every launch, but it is important that people take it upon themselves to understand the clean, drain, dry concept. So we provide storts and decontamination at certain areas as a courtesy, but it is ultimately the responsibility of the boaters to make sure that their equipment is clean.
After the three-year grant from the DEC runs its course, the Upper Saranac Foundation hopes to continue the work in Fish Creek Pond. As you can see, there is a lot left to be done. Quinnipiac and Siena have come out with polls this month on Governor Andrew Cuomo, so we thought we'd do the same. Our question, would you like to see Andrew Cuomo run for a third term as governor? Log on to our website and let us know, nynow.org. Last week, we asked if your views on the news media have changed at all in 2017, and 60% said yes. Many replies on this one. Here are some of the responses. Marianne in Broad Alban said, "Thank heavens they are there now to keep us informed when we have an administration in Washington who love to keep us in the dark." Ron from LaGrangeville, "I am 100% behind them because they are doing an excellent job of reporting the truth about a president and his administration who spew nothing but lies and fake news every time they speak." Harold in New York City does not share the same view. He says, "Comics are more accurate than the framed news. And finally, Don in the Hudson Valley says, I no longer trust or watch major network news. They have totally lost my trust. Thanks so much for all the feedback, and we hope to hear from you again. The website is nynow.org. While you're there, you can watch any of our past programs and follow links to us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, where our handle is at nynow_PBS. You'll also want to log on to the Capital Confidential blog. You can hit it on our site or go to timesunion.com. All right, Casey, you, Karen, and Ken talked about the latest polling that came out this week, something that got overlooked. Senator Chuck Schumer, the senior U.S. senator, down 15 points, I think it was in the Siena poll.
Yeah, and of course, Schumer is now the minority leader in the Senate. Not really surprising. You see the same kind of thing happen to Mitch McConnell in Kentucky, now, of course, the majority leader. You know, when you take on these kind of national responsibilities, that is going to tend to diminish the amount of time that you can spend on sort of parochial retail politics. Schumer, of course, is a master of, you know, crisscrossing the state. He's famous for kind of his county by county tours every year, trying to hit every county. That's going to be a lot tougher for him to do because of his national responsibilities, especially in this type of, you know, extremely heightened political environment. All right, well, we leave you today with shots from Lock 2 of the Erie Canal in the Saratoga County of Waterford. I'm Casey Seiler.
And I'm Matt Ryan. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time right here on your local PBS station.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET. Additional funding provided by the Leo Cox Beach Philanthropic Foundation.